Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
It is 5:04. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Barnes, Brad Thompson, Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker. We are at Glen Echo Country Club. This is the site of the MAC Golf Tournament, and it looks like weather's about to hit. So if we have to run inside, we'll play commercials. Or
there'll be good ones too.
Oh, right. Yeah, they'll be really good.
There's been weather all day.
Yeah, we've got
just a different kind of weather.
Bad weather.
Oh,
here.
I got you.
Yeah. We've got Take It or Leave It coming up in a moment. You can send in your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. But before we get to Teoli, part of Sports Talk Radio is having good hot takes and being able to get mad at and yell at listeners and co-hosts. See, that's part of it. Well, Dan Dockich has all of that figured out. The ESPN college basketball analyst also hosts a talk show on 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis, and he went off after hearing the news of Andrew Luck's retirement. This is a guy that in 2002 took the West Virginia coaching job when he found out that there might be NCAA sanctions. He thought it looked too hard, and he pulled out and went back home.
I bet he forgot that happened.
Probably.
Probably from the head injury.
Too hard.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I kind of think he's just a talking head.
Yeah, I think so.
No, kinda he's been on this anti-Andrew Luck train for a while. And this was, I bet this weekend was his happiest day.
Yeah. That's a little misguided.
Former NBAer Delonte West appears to be both broke and homeless. There's a photo going around on the internet showing West sitting on a street corner, prompting speculation that he's fallen on hard times. Guys, take it or leave it. He should have stuck with LeBron's mom.
Son of a...
I'm going to take it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take that, too.
Of course.
Yeah, but what's the matter with you? I'm going to take it.
He wouldn't be homeless right now.
He
Randy,
would not be homeless.
Randy, I'm going to take it, but what is wrong with you?
I'm just saying.
Oh, that's a good way in. If you can't play like LeBron, get in, you
with
know,
his
with his mom.
Yeah.
Which he already was.
Hey, I'm your stepdad now.
Yeah. You can call me daddy. And you're paying for this. All of this. All
you guys have seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, right?
Yes.
Where his stepmom is 3 years older than him.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's what you want.
Sleeper movie, by the way. Aren't they making a remake?
They are. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a remake, but they're.
Or they're doing
Alex
another
Winter.
One.
Is Alex Winter from St. Louis? Whatever. Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are in the next Bill and Ted. I think they're grown up now.
Okay.
In the movie.
It's going to be hard to
yes.
see John Wick now as that guy. But, you know.
Or Neo.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right. So we just heard Dan Dockich go crazy on Andrew Luck. Take it or leave it. Andrew Luck will come back to the NFL just to piss off Dan Dockich at some point.
I'll take it.
Ah, hell, why not
yeah,
take it?
Yeah, I'll take it, too, just because I want to see it.
I wish he would.
I want to see him less tired in a couple of years.
But speaking of this news, it was the biggest sports story of the weekend by far. Nobody expected it to happen, but everybody knew it did happen, or did they?
Six times, what was it like going against Andrew Luck?
Yeah, that's a good player. Yeah,
That is Patriots coach Bill Belichick, who says he did not see that happen because he's so involved with his own football team. Take it or leave it, he's full of crap.
I'm going to take it. As he was saying that, all I could think in my head was, blank you. Stop.
One of the best quarterbacks in the league retires out of nowhere, and not one person on your staff came into the room and said, oh, my God, Andrew Luck quit.
That's even rattling his flip phone.
Well, the Patriots did clarify later and said what he meant was, I didn't see that coming, which that is not what he said. So they are full of crap.
Big Sims, what do you got for us?
Take it or leave it, Andrew Luck only retired from the NFL so he could play for his dad in the XFL.
Gonna leave that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I'll leave that one too.
I'm taking it.
Dad, I'm going to help you with your startup.
Yeah. Can you give me $25 million a year? I was only getting 24 and a half in the old place.
Sorry, son, can't do that. Would you play for peanuts? Actually, they can offer some contracts. Ain't going to be like that. But, yeah, I'm going to leave
you said peanuts?
I think so.
Okay.
I hope so.
Thanks, Coach.
Honestly, though, whatever you need to sweeten the pot, you know?
Take it or leave it, when O.J. Simpson found out that Andrew Luck retired, it cut like a knife.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I'm going to take it, too. He had just drafted him in his fantasy draft. You know, how dare Andrew Luck not tell O.J. Simpson that he was going to quit, to retire. So, taking it.
It's a real shame O.J. has to go on another manhunt now.
Oh, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, for a new quarterback.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Take it or leave it, the Blues will look outside of the organization for a tough guy replacement for Pat Maroon.
You'll leave it.
I'll leave it.
I'll leave that, too.
I feel like that part of the game, teams are not so worried about it.
Yeah, it's pretty much out of the game now.
Yep.
Lee Trevino one time, when asked what he would do if he had to play through a storm, said, I would lift up my one iron and point it to the sky because not even God can hit the one iron. Take it or leave it. You have a better chance of getting struck by lightning than properly hitting a one iron.
I'll take that.
I will take it.
I've got to leave it. I can at least get one iron every once in a while. My low irons are not a strength, man. Anything, honestly, 5 and below, which 5 isn't that low, I don't strike very well. Like, Randy, you know the feeling of when you just don't hit a golf ball cleanly where it rattles in your hand. Anything 5, 4, or 3, that gets really? Me every time.
Yeah, Tiger used to hit a one iron unbelievably for some stupid reason. About 20 years ago, I bought a one iron. It's still sitting in a bag down in my basement.
Really?
I've hit it. I don't know if I've ever hit that club on a course because I just could not hit it on a range. It's
so
impossible.
We're sitting right here. We're at Glen Echo. And is this 9 or 18 right here?
I think this is 18.
So we're right at the end of 18. So it's a long fairway, and you're shooting directly at us. The green is approximately, I don't know, 25 yards
Actually,
in front of us.
Actually, I think this is 9. Sorry.
Either way.
My bad.
I told you guys beforehand, I guarantee you that if I'm in the fairway, I skull one and I hit us because I don't have much touch. I would end up here. So a one iron's not my thing.
Take it or leave it, the Cardinals will win 90 or more games this season. That
take it.
19 more wins from here on out.
Take it.
Out 19 of how many games? 33? 19 and 12? Yeah.
33, yep. 12.
Get some.
I'll take it. Why not? Against the schedule they're playing? Yeah. I'll go with that.
Take it or leave it, Goldie gets locked in this series and stays hot through the rest of the year.
Take that, too.
Yeah, I'm going to take it as well. He was hot last series, and he's going to keep it going.
Why not?
Sunshine.
Take it.
You know, Goldie and Ozuna,
you mentioned
Matt Carpenter is back, and he is better.
Oh, he's fixed now.
Yeah.
And he did something. He actually did something really good.
We should
good.
Celebrate yeah. that.
Could you not, just, and this is my request to you guys.
Sure.
Please don't bring up O.J. Simpson for the rest of the show.
Oh, sure.
So we stop getting text messages like Luck's retirement really killed OJ's playoff hopes.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Because you know that our texters and listeners are just childish, and they're going to send in stuff like that.
We don't need stuff like that. We aren't going to read it either.
No, I'm not going to read
not
it.
Show up on
like
here.
This one. OJ shouldn't have any issues making a cut to his roster.
See, this is what I'm talking
Gosh,
about.
Jerks.
Why are you doing that? We're better than this.
Somebody died.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. Next up, the Dodgers and Yankees are looking to perhaps call up some of their most coveted prospects for September. Should the Cardinals consider the same for Dylan Carlson? That's next on 101 ESPN. That is Mark Saxon of The Athletic talking about Cardinals top prospect Dylan Carlson, who, since being recalled by Memphis to AAA, is hitting .455 in 11 games with a .510 on base, a .773 slug, and a .283 OPS. His OPS in the minors for the year is .920. His on base for the year in AA and AAA combined .378, and he's slugging .542, a .920 OPS. And it's interesting, guys. Ken Rosenthal writes at The Athletic that the Dodgers, with the best record in the National League, are considering the promotion of infielder Gavin Lux. He's hitting .407 with a .1240 OPS. And the Yankees, with the best record in the American League, are considering calling up Devi Garcia, their top prospect, a right-handed pitcher, and they would use him out of the bullpen, at least initially. And that brings to mind the question, would or should the Cardinals bring up a guy like Dylan Carlson, who was a topic of discussion today at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com on Mondays with Mo, the Cardinal Pobo, John Mozeliak.
He is mostly hitting second right now in the lineup and getting an opportunity to play multiple positions, but having him stationed mostly out in right field right now. But his athleticism allows him to play everywhere, and that's a good thing. He's certainly opening up some eyes at that level, and at his age, doing what he's doing, I think really is going to show you the type of player he is. And I think as we enter in the offseason, you're going to hear his name a lot more in terms of top or elite prospects in the game of baseball.
Carlson will turn 21 on October 23rd. So the question is, if the Dodgers are thinking about it with Lux, if the Yankees are thinking about it with Garcia, should the Cardinals be thinking about it with Dylan Carlson?
Well, the answer is yes. They should absolutely be thinking about it. Now, I don't know if I'm reading too much into the comments that I hear there. I hear him put emphasis on that level. He's young and next year, mm-hmm. or the emphasis that I heard in the statement there. But and the question goes back to what Mark Saxon said off the top. If you believe that Dylan Carlson, even at 20 years old with very limited experience, can help you win right now, I think that you do that. Now, if you look at it and say, hey, this is the lineup that we're going to roll out there. This is the group that we're going to have. We trust in our group, and we believe that this is the group we're going to win with, then fine. But I wouldn't leave something on the table because you don't want to start somebody's clock.
Now, one issue that you would have in bringing him up, he's a switch hitter who is hitting .458 with a .1333 OPS against right-handed pitchers. Against left-handed pitchers, he's only hitting .450 with a .1222.
Yeah, you need to think about that.
You should have led with that, and then we wouldn't have had to have this segment. You know,
yeah,
so
I don't know.
It's quite obvious you're not going to.
He's got to pick things up from the left side,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Certainly.
Yeah, so let's talk about something else now since that's solved.
I want to see him.
I do too.
Yeah, I just feel like, and it's not, I don't think that if the Cardinals don't call up Dylan Carlson, I'm not going to be sitting here screaming about it. But the Cardinals had an opportunity at the trade deadline to better their team. That didn't happen. And by the way, the team has responded just fine. They're playing really good baseball. They got themselves in a great spot. But potentially with Dylan Carlson, certainly they know their player better. They know the roster better. They know how much they want to mix things up better as well, because I do believe that continuity is a big thing when you're going down the stretch in September of guys that have been there throughout the season that you've leaned on. But if they look at all these things and say, man, Dylan would make this ball club better, he'd provide us a little spark, you have to do it.
Oh, absolutely. You have to do anything you can to make your team better, especially when you're in a playoff race and there's a month to go. If you do think he's going to increase your odds of getting to the postseason, it's a no-brainer for me. What I'm curious about is, knowing where the Yankees and Dodgers are, each of those two teams, the similarity between them is they are going to win their divisions. They're set. Those two teams are perfectly fine. All they're doing is getting themselves ready for the postseason at this point because they are not going to collapse. So how does he fit into their plans? What are their prospects? What do those prospects for them do for those teams individually? And knowing that whatever those prospects get in terms of playing time, it's not going to be the kind of thing where they're being asked to produce like – you have to produce for us, kid, because we need the help. They don't need the help. They can kind of just go at their own pace. It's a little bit of a different situation than it would be here for the Cardinals.
He's the kind of guy that you could bring off the bench to steal a base. He's stolen 18 bases in the minors this year.
Right.
He doesn't have to automatically step in and be your number three hitter, which is a luxury for him and for the ball club. But, Brad, you can answer this better than us. What sort of value is there in being up on the major league scene?
It's a big value, especially – so here's another aspect, and I'm glad you brought that part of it up, because we spoke earlier about Marcell Ozuna. What do you do with him? What does the future look like? Do you sign him back? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't sign him back, certainly Tyler O'Neill is on the radar as a guy that can be out there and fill it, but Dylan Carlson should be as well. So I would love to see, if that's my thought, is, hey, we'll give it a run at Ozuna, but we don't know in our heart of hearts if it's going to happen. I'd also like to see how this guy responds at the big league level and get him acclimated to it. I don't think that the Cardinals' thought currently is to start next season with Dylan Carlson on their roster. I don't believe that that's their hope for the season, but it could happen. And maybe he forces your hand. And the value of being up in a September for a young player, it is huge. I mean, you learn about them. They're playing an extra month. They're seeing things. They're learning things. They're sitting in meetings. The overall shock of initially being in a stadium where, like, oh, man, there's a third deck on this place.
Right.
Like, you get that over with early, and you get to learn with some of the best down the stretch. It's huge to be able to get
that. I don't know how much – you certainly can't measure how much of a value that is, but there's got to be something to it that if he does get called up in 2020 at some point, but he has already been here for a month in 2019 – that he's got all that stuff out of the way. You've done it. You've done that initial shock thing, and you know what it's like, even if it's only for a few weeks. You have an idea, so you can sort of focus on baseball a little bit better, I think.
And when it comes down to the starting the clock early on a young player, I talked about this earlier. If you're a team that's out of the playoffs, it makes sense to not do it. Like Luis Robert, it makes no sense for the White Sox to bring him up, even though he's one of the most electrifying players in the game right now, potentially could be a superstar at the big league level. If I'm the White Sox, I'm probably not going to do it. I'm going to wait, and I'm not going to start the clock. But for the Cardinals, they're in the thick of things right now. This is a team that needs to make a push. This is a team that needs to make the playoffs. This is a team that needs to have their best roster available for them at all times. And also, if Dylan Carlson ends up being the player that you expect him to be, if he is the guy that you can see being in your outfield for the foreseeable future, he probably would also fall under that category of a guy that you'd like to lock up early anyhow. So what does it matter if you start his clock early?
From a business standpoint, you're 100% right. It makes sense for teams to wait a little bit. For a fan's entertainment standpoint, I don't think it's a great thing that some of the potentially best players in baseball are not here right now because teams are manipulating that service time.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, Andrew Luck has retired from the NFL, and there's no better person to talk about that than our friend Rick Venturi, who's in Indy. The coach will join us next year on 101 ESPN. That is Colts quarterback Andrew Luck announcing his retirement on Saturday night with Brad Thompson, Chris Ronji. I'm Randy Carricker, and to the Brown and Crouppen celebrity line we go. And our friend, Rick Venturi, the coach, is with us on 101 ESPN. It's great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm really good after one of the most bizarre, and I've had many bizarre days in my career. But Saturday was right up there at the top. You know, we were doing the game. We're doing the game live, really kind of enjoying the game for the first half. And then this fourth quarter, you know, everything hit the fan and, you know, really put a damper on the day. The timing was just ridiculous. And, you know, this city basically went into a state of shock, and I think some people still are. But, you know, coaches and players got to move on. As we all know, we need our best Dick Vermeil right now with that famous, we'll play with Kurt Warner and we will play good football. We need a little of that right now.
So, definitely, as you mentioned, some people are still shocked. You see a guy 29 years old, a lot of people look at the money that he left on the table and are stunned. You, though, I mean, you've seen a lot of things at this point after having, you know, about 48 hours to digest it. What are your thoughts about this happening and him making this decision?
Well, you kind of have to know the overall situation. You know, I think what you're seeing really, Brad, is a psychological meltdown of a player. I think what has happened, you know, he has had an accumulation of injuries over the last 4 years, although last year was wonderful, basically 18 sacks the whole year. He played in the Pro Bowl, and then he came back from Europe with this mysterious calf injury. You know, so there's a cumulative issue there. But I think a lot of it's psychological. I think, you know, he all of a sudden he is a different kind of guy. And when I say that, you know, he's an architectural engineer, he's a very brilliant guy. And when he's on the field, he's tough. He plays well. He's tough on the field. When he's between the lines, he is the guy. He makes it happen. But if you ever listen to him in a lot of his press conferences, because you only get bits and pieces, they're lengthy, they're endurance, you know, and there's times they're geeky, filled with overanalysis of things. And, you know, this guy's a guy that has a real advanced life. I mean, he goes to Europe. He goes to England to watch soccer games. I mean, what NFL player does that? You know, I mean, and, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, I think a year ago he came back, and it was a low-expectation year for everyone. So the pressure on him was really, it was more hope. Is he going to be back? And he did, and he really had the career year. If you look at it statistically, he had the best year of his life. And then this year, this mysterious leg thing, this lower leg thing, and, you know, I think as training camp has worn on and we've not seen him, we saw him for 15 7-on-7 plays. That's it. He's not been there. Brissett has taken every snap from the beginning. And so, you know, I'm not sure. It just didn't wear on him. We've all been there in our life. But the rest of us don't have $97 million, so we don't have the luxury of walking away from it. As a humanitarian, you know, I can empathize to some degree, you know, but my DNA just has a really hard time accepting anybody walking away with a sore leg, to tell you the truth.
I don't think any of us disagree that this is the kind of decision that if you're a player and you just don't want the pain anymore, you're in the right to go ahead and say, I don't want to do this any longer. There are some people, though, who did not like it. You heard the Colts fans react the way they did. Do you believe the organization did anything wrong in the way they handled this?
Well, you know, that's the conspiracy theory. I would only ask three questions on that because none of us really know. Something may come out some point in time, and if there's a conspiracy involved to sell tickets, they'll never recover from it. I would only ask three questions in that vein. Number one, was it properly diagnosed when he came back from Europe? Because I know the people that rehab them every day, and there's not going to be a mistake there. Now, if there was a mistake in the diagnosis, if it, down the road it turns out to be something more than a high ankle sprain or calf or whatever, you know, then that would be inexcusable. Then number two, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but a week ago when we did the national television game against the Browns, he made an appearance before the teams came out that was chronicled by everyone. I mean, you're not going to go into a stage like that and not have people know. He came out on the field. His quarterback coach ran him through drills. He went over bags. And I'll be honest with you, if – you know, I've done that a million times, you know, when a guy has a game-time decision and you take him out an hour and a half early. And when I watched that and I saw it live, I thought, you know, I've seen guys a heck of a lot worse that, you know, could play in the game. Now, the reason I bring that up is after a lot of secrecy, that particular thing, all of a sudden, 7 days before the deal, gave this town great optimism. That was an optimistic thing. And so to me, the question is, was that a luck thing? Did the Colts sanction it, which they had to? It did it in Lucas Oil. It wasn't like he did it someplace else. So all of a sudden, you know, after the second preseason game, you got your quarterback out there, and all of a sudden now, you know, your optimism and the town's optimism goes up on a grade, you know, and then 7 days later, the third question is, how in the hell did you leak it to Adam? That's not Adam's fault. That's Adam's job. Adam, you know, I'm not into the new way of doing things, you know, first rather than accurate, but that's his job, and that's the world we live in. But whoever leaked it created a terrible situation, because had he had a press conference Sunday, it would have been shocking. But with a three-piece suit and a good backdrop and an emotional, you know, people would have understood. You know, the fans are who they are. When you raise your hand to be a coach or a pro player, which you know, Brad, doggone it, when they pay big money, and people, fans are getting angry because these preseason games, they're held hostage and they're not playing. So they come with a little edge to start with. And then when you end up reading it on social media, and here's a guy, you know, laughing and joking in a white T-shirt with his players, and he walks off the field, that was a spontaneous reaction, and you have to live with that. And I actually understand that. I really do. And I know people are killing him on that. But in reality, that was just – and the whole thing, by letting that leak and letting that get out and ruining the timing, they created a terrible situation.
The great Rick Venturi with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coach, we've seen Reggie White retire and come back a year later. We saw Chris Miller here retire because of concussions and come back. Is there a possibility, in, at least in your mind, as you watch Andrew Luck over the years, is he a guy that could maybe get to next January and say, you know what, I feel pretty darn good, and maybe come back?
I do. I really do. You know, I've been there. I've been in that darkest hour in 1995. I had a brownout, or, you know, I mean, you could call it a nervous breakdown. And, you know, and I realized that, you know, it took me about 2 weeks just to get rested and realize that this was my life. And, you know, I couldn't live without it. And, you know, I was able to recover and couldn't wait to get back in. And I think this, the expectations for this year, the pressure mountain to be at the, you know, a top tier guy and to take a team to the Super Bowl. And then with this nagging injury, whatever it is, and then falling behind and behind and behind, I think that got to him. I think when he recovers and rests, you know, and gets himself right, and once he gets out there and realizes that running book clubs isn't nearly the thrill of running, being in the hunt every day, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, again, as I said, he's a very different, you know, type of individual, lives a very advanced life in that sense, and all positive, but it's, he, you know, I see him sometimes as a guy who may be, you know, running a book club session in March where, you know, a guy like Peyton Manning is watching tape. I mean, there is a difference, but I honestly believe that, you know, there would be a possibility that he could be back.
Coach, do you think with, and certainly the amount of money that's made in the league is a factor. I mean, guys don't have to put in as much time. They're set up for life. And certainly everybody understands the inherent risk of playing football. Do you think that these early retirements could end up being a new norm in the NFL?
Well, I don't think there's any question. It does have effect on it. You know, I mean, and I think it kind of goes into your DNA. You know, I mean, you see the numbers down in football at all levels, be it St. Louis, be it Indianapolis, Chicago. I mean, the numbers of the grassroots, all the scares, all the stuff has had its effect. You know, I do think that, you know, early retirement with certain guys, depending on what their, you know, what their lifestyle is and what they have going, is there. And I think what it comes down to, I think you can say that you love the game. Okay, we can say I love the game. That's an easy thing to say, and in some respects you probably do love lots of it. But love comes and goes. I mean, we have divorces in marriages every day. The key to me is the game your existence. If it's your existence, then you'll find a way to play. If it isn't, then you might not. And so, you know, for some of us, you know, basically it is our existence. And, you know, even in my mid-70s, I can't let it go. But, you know, again, it was my existence. It was the way I survived. It was the way, you know, I have made a living and a lifestyle. And it is more than what I love. It is my life.
Coach, you talked about the DNA a couple of times, that whole thing, that vibe of it being you. When it comes down to organizations, and, I mean, certainly, I mean, we're talking to you, so the Colts, when you're looking at players, everybody can see the numbers, everybody sees the big boards and where they're supposed to be drafted. How much of the process of drafting players is digging into that DNA?
Oh, I think it's huge, and I think by and large – Chris Ballard and his personnel staff really here today are state-of-the-art. I mean, I don't think anybody has retooled the roster better than these guys, and they do a great job. They leave no stone unturned. They have psychological guys that test them. You know, they have an ex-Green Beret guy that basically has tests for, you know, your stick-to-itiveness and toughness and those. I mean, there is no stone left unturned. And in saying that, you gave me a bit of a segue, is I don't think this is a throwout season. I mean, I don't think this is a tank it because of this. I think, you know, we're not sure where Brissett is. You know, he had some highs and lows in 17. He played with a terrible football team, but did a lot of good things. You know, this roster's totally different in 19 than it was in 17. This is a really good football team, and this is a really good offensive coaching staff. And I think that they will do a good job with him, whether or not he can connect the dots. If you isolate his skills, he's got them. Whether or not he can connect the dots in full speed for 16 Sundays, 60 minutes, you know, that remains to be seen. We'll start to find that out in a couple weeks. But, again, I don't think this is a throwaway at all. There's so much parity. You know, I thought really going into August, you know, before this, I really thought that two of my alumni teams, the Saints and the Colts, were the best positioned two teams on paper, if you look at it, to really be the finalist. And, of course, we've taken a little hit there. I mean, Las Vegas has dropped this like from 12 to 1 to 70 to 1. But I don't believe in that either, because I've said this to Randy many times. I mean, I think, you know, when you go into an NFL season, they give every team an 8-8, and you make it 6-10 or 10-6 by what you do.
Hey, finally, Coach, you'll appreciate this. It is going to be a high of about 78 here on Wednesday. It's going to be no rain. It's going to be complete sun. It's going to be one of those late August days that you used to take your bike out and ride out 94 to Defiance.
Well, you know, and I really miss that out in Chesterfield. I was one stop sign away from some beautiful country. I follow those Redbirds. That 2.5 game lead looks pretty good right now. I just hope they can hold it. I'm kind of in the middle of Reds and Cub country here, believe it or not. But I wear that Redbird hat as much as I can.
We love to hear it. Hey, it's always great to hear your voice. Thanks so much for your insight. We always appreciate it, and it's always great to have you on the show.
All right, thank you, guys. Love being with you.
Thanks, Coach. That is Rick Venturi joining us here on 101 ESPN. Next up, Derek Gould recently spoke with Cardinal Chairman Bill DeWitt about the way the Cardinals are doing business, and we'll talk about that for a bit next on 101 ESPN. Over the weekend, Derek Gould of the Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com had an interview with Cardinal Chairman Bill DeWitt talking about the cost of players and the Cardinals' model, and he mentioned to Bill DeWitt that the last time the Cardinals really had an expensive multi-year closer was Jason Isringhouse. And DeWitt said, right, I think that in that era it was a little easier to acquire premium players from clubs who either felt they couldn't re-sign them or didn't feel they were going to be competitive or wanted to go young. Of course, that signing took place in 2001. Here we are 18 years later. But to me, that seems like the way most of baseball has gone. It seems like the closer has kind of become a disposable role for a lot of teams.
There are outliers. There are some of those guys that are special that you want to keep around that'll command those types of big salaries. Craig Kimbrell has been one of those guys, certainly this year an outlier for him. Aroldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen. But you look at some of the other deals that have been passed out, and I see why some organizations would be a tad bit gun shy. Wade Davis, who we saw over the weekend, has got like a 7 ERA, can't find it. Mark Melancon, that deal did not turn out so well. I mean, there are a lot of them where you could point at and say, man, we got some young kids here that we think can get the job done. So you don't see that one anymore. I love the fact I love it when your team has that guy when he's locked down, but it's not necessary, I don't think, at this point.
No, and I think the way I see the closer anyway is if you're going to spend on one, to me that's the kind of thing you do when you feel like you've got everything else set. Your bullpen's in pretty good shape, but you need a closer. Your offense is good. You know, you feel like you're pretty solid 1-8 or 1-9. You feel like your starting rotation is intact. To me, it's not the thing you go after first. But if you have some money and you feel like that one piece you need is a closer, why not? Go ahead and do it and make that happen. It's like the final piece of the puzzle. If it ends up hurting you in terms of him not being able to perform, then so be it, but at least you tried. I just don't think it's the first order of business for most teams.
I thought it was interesting also that Derek Gould asked DeWitt about player acquisition and something that we've talked about a lot, the Cardinals' ability over the years to go out and make trades for veteran players. But he says it's different now because it used to be that the Cardinals could give up prospects without giving up their best prospects. He says now it's like, I'm going to take your number one, two, three, and throw in your sixth, seventh, or eighth best prospect. That's kind of what you're looking at to get a premium player. Look at what Arizona got for Zach Greinke, top prospects. Houston's system is so strong they can afford to give up what they gave up for what they believe to be a difference maker in the postseason. I think that's the difference from back when we were doing the other deals. We gave up good players, but it wasn't stripping out our system.
So you just used to be able to fleece people. Essentially,
right.
Is how it is, and everybody's got so much information. There's a premium on young talent, and you understand that, and you understand Gould. Derek also asked him about just does he understand that the fans were frustrated around the trade deadline, and, you know, DeWitt says, you know, they have the goal of being in the playoffs. I mean, that's what they want to do, but they also weren't willing to sacrifice the future for stuff like that. They didn't want a short-term fix. DeWitt saying that and said, we don't believe in that. We don't do that. And the other guys that weren't traded, the guys that had multi-year deals that wouldn't be those rentals, he said they weren't traded for a reason. So certainly there were things that the organization was trying to do that they didn't end up being able to do. But still frustration around, and at least there's an understanding of it.
Yeah, and that's good that he does understand it, because I believe the frustration was warranted. And what it means for me, and he basically said it, that the Houston Astros could afford to make that kind of deal because that's not going to kill them. They have the talent. Well, that means to me that you need to get your system in such a way that if you give up a couple of really good prospects, it's not going to hurt you, that you have enough talent.
You tank like they did and draft
I don't
top
know.
Of the draft
I,
for years?
I mean, maybe.
Hell no.
But if you're – look, if you want to have currency to spend and not feel like it's going to kill your franchise in order to spend it, then you need to find a way to get it.
To be clear, you aren't saying you'd rather be in last place than first place right now.
No.
You could. That's what tanking is.
Well, yeah, but here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if in the future – like they were at this past deadline. And everybody on this show was in agreement that it was not a great thing. They weren't able to make a deal. But if your organization is in such a way that you can't, or you feel like you can't make a deal because you don't have enough to spend to make that deal happen, then you have to do something to address that, whatever that is. Draft better, develop better, whatever it is.
Don't win as much. It's one.
The one place,
that could be one thing.
And the one place where we could all agree is with the international spending with Robber a few years ago,
yep,
in 2017. He changes the dynamic of your entire system. If you have both he and Dylan Carlson at the same time now, changes really the entire dynamic of your system.
Right. Well, and the Yankees have a lot of young talent that hasn't made the major leagues yet, and they haven't been particularly bad for a while. So whatever it is, you have to figure out a way to make that area of your organization better.
And the Yankees benefited with the trades of Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman a few years ago, and they have really spent internationally. And that's available now. You can still get the best player without having to draft him,
yep,
and the Yankees have done a good job of that.
They have spent, and they have been shrewd.
Yeah, their best prospect, Devi Garcia, is an international guy.
It's
Luis
huge.
Severino,
yep,
was one of those guys.
Well, and the Cardinals have been very active in the international, yep, markets as well, and it's panned out. Also, losing some draft picks a couple of years ago didn't help out the Cardinals' farm system very much either.
Yeah, losing picks, and then most recently the injury to Reyes. You talk about what you were looking for at the trade deadline and what you don't have.
That's that guy.
That's the guy. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN coming up. We know preseason predictions really don't mean anything, but the one in our next story might catch Ranja's attention. That's next before With All Due Respect on 101 ESPN.